Chapter 14. I fell into line with the other ships, the wide variety of which was still astounding to me, and looked out at the tumbling asteroids. They were closer together than I had expected, and we'd barely have room to maneuver through some of them. Perhaps they had been towed here for processing. While we waited for instructions, another vessel pulled into line a few ships down from me. It was a sleek, black-canopied Krellfighter. The type that I had fought back on Detritus, the type that always carried a Krell ace. My mind immediately went on alert, my body rigid, my hands tight on my controls. In a line of bulky shuttlecraft, this ship looked like a knife ready to cut. Calm down, I told myself. It's not surprising that someone would bring a ship like this to a piloting test. It still set me on edge, and I kept finding myself glancing out of the corner of my eye toward it. Who was piloting the thing? That Dione with the two-tone face? No, I'd seen him getting into a simple shuttlecraft, not some sleek fighter. In fact, I was sure I hadn't seen this ship on any of the launch pads. Who? I felt a sense from the ship as I glanced at it again, a kind of ringing sound, soft and distant. And I immediately knew who it was. The human was here. Kuna and Winzik were playing some political game and using cytonics like me and Braid as their pieces. However, the knowledge, the surety that Braid was in there left me feeling even more disturbed. That was a human flying a Krell fighter. It was wrong on an indescribable number of levels. Thank you for answering our call, Winzik's voice said over the general instructions channel. As a reminder, we are removing ship-to-ship radio rationing for this exercise. Permit 1082B, authorized by me. So you may communicate with one another if you find reason to do so. We recognize and commend your bravery. If at any time during this test you feel excessive anger or aggression, please remove yourself from contentions by powering down your ship and flashing your emergency signal lights. One of our ships will come and tow you back to the mining station. Seriously? I asked softly. My mute button was on, so I was speaking only to Embot. If we feel aggression during a fighting exercise, we're supposed to pull out? Perhaps, unlike you. Not all people are accustomed to turning every single item in their lives into a competition, Embot said. Oh, come on, I said. I'm not that bad. I recorded you trying to get Kimmelin to have a toothbrushing contest the other night in the barracks. Just a little fun, I said. Besides, gotta kill that plaque, good and dead. Winzik continued on the general channel. Today, we will test not just your flight skill, but how well you maintain your composure under fire, he said. I implore you not to be reckless. If you are concerned by the danger of this fight, please power down and flash your emergency lights. Do be aware, however, that this will remove you from further consideration as a pilot. Good luck. The comm cut off. And then my proximity sensors went insane as dozens of drone ships detached from the bottom of the mining platform and began swarming toward us. Scud! I started moving before my mind specifically registered the danger. Accelerating to Mag 3, I maneuvered around large clumps of asteroids, my back pressing into my seat. Behind me, the 500 other hopefuls basically went crazy. They scattered in all directions, looking like nothing so much as a bunch of insects suddenly discovered hiding under a rock. I was glad my quick instincts got me out ahead of them, because not a few bumped into each other as they failed to coordinate flight paths. I didn't see any full-on collisions or explosions, fortunately. These ships were shielded, and the pilots weren't incompetent. Still, it was immediately obvious that many of them had never flown in a battlefield setting. The drones swarmed in behind us, using normal Krell attack patterns, which meant picking on stragglers and using superior numbers to overwhelm ships. Outside of their general tactics, Krell didn't actually synchronize well with their compatriots. They didn't fly in pairs or organized wingmate teams. and they didn't coordinate different groups of ships to fulfill different roles on the battlefield. We'd always wondered why this was, and had theorized that detritus's shell interfered with their communications. Now, as I pulled out farther away from the rest, I had to wonder. My people had been forged in constant battle, forced to field only our very best pilots in an endless and grueling fight for survival. The superiority, in turn, had massive resources, and their drone pilots weren't risking their lives. I checked and could hear the instructions being sent to these drones via the nowhere. Since such communication was instantaneous, according to the DDF's research, it was possible that these ships were piloted by the very same people who fought us on Detritus. But could it really be true that the superiority had only a single group of drone pilots? There was no way to know. For now, I pivoted through the asteroid field, using my light lance to take a few quick turns. "No drones are chasing us," Ambot said. "I am scanning for any potential ambushes." He was faster and more responsive than anything else I saw on the battlefield. Though he was larger than a lot of our DDF fighters, Ambot was what we called an interceptor, a very maneuverable and fast ship, intended for quick battlefield movements and assessments. Back home, I'd been part of a team with specialized roles. Jorgen, for example, usually flew a Largo, a heavy fighter with a large shield and a lot of firepower. Kimmelin flew a Sniper, a small, highly accurate craft that could pick off ships while their attention was diverted toward me or Jorgen. Fighting these last few months had been a group effort, usually with our flight being made up of 6 interceptors, 2 heavy fighters, and 2 snipers. It felt strangely isolating to be flying into battle alone this time, after fighting for so long as part of a team. However, that emotion made me feel guilty. I hadn't truly appreciated what I'd had, instead often flying off on my own. I would have given a great deal to have either Jorgen or Kimmelin out here with me now. I forced myself to concentrate on my flying. It was good to be in a cockpit doing some training. I let myself focus on that instead, the feel of the boosters humming behind me, the quiet sound of Embot giving battlefield updates. This I knew. This part, at least, I could do. I swung back around, skimming through the asteroid field beneath where most of the other ships were dodging drones. I wanted to get a view of the battlefield and try to decide how exactly the test would play out. "Flight Command," I said, calling in. "This is Alanik, the pilot from Redon. Can you detail our objective for this test?"
"Objective, pilot," the reply came, an unfamiliar voice. "It's simple. Stay alive for 30 standard minutes."
"Yes, but what constitutes a death in this exercise?" I asked. "A broken shield? Or are you using paint rounds instead?"
"Pilot," the reply came. "I think you mistake us."
Above me, the drones started firing sweeping sprays of destructor blasts. A straggling ship nearby went up in a series of flashes, its shield going down, and then the ship itself exploded. Elsewhere, stray destructor fire detonated against asteroids, flashing before being consumed by the vacuum.
"You're using live fire?" I demanded. "During a testing exercise?"
No reply came from Flight Command. My hands grew tense on my controls, and my heart started racing. Suddenly, the context of this entire fight changed.
"Scud," I said. "What is wrong with these people?
They complain about aggression, then send fully armed drones against a bunch of half-trained hopefuls?"
"I think," Ambot said, "maybe the superiority might not be very nice."
"What led you to that brilliant deduction?" I said, grunting and spinning my ship in a light lance pivot around an asteroid. Above, 3 Krell drones swarmed down through the field, targeting me. "Calm," I told myself. "You know how to do this." I moved by instinct, boosting a little faster and judging the drones' attack strategy. 2 stayed on my tail, while 1 sped up and cut to the right, trying to get ahead of me. I didn't rely on my cytonic senses to read the drone's instructions. I didn't want to show off that I knew how to do that, and instead piloted normally. I cut to the side, spearing an asteroid with my light lance and spinning around it before letting go at just the right moment to send me hurtling back toward the drones. I held my fire, though. As we passed each other, I performed another pivot, darting after them. This put me behind them. Normally, my job would be to chase these two back toward where Kimmelin would be waiting to pick them off. Today, I'd need to do it all myself. I started firing on the drones, but they split apart, heading different directions. I chose one and dodged after it. "I'm tracking the other two," Embot said. "They're weaving back this way, but it's slow going through the asteroids." I nodded, focused almost entirely on the chase after this drone. It cut downward, and I was able to anticipate it, darting parallel to it. I waited for it to turn again, and at exactly the right moment, I launched my light lance and speared the enemy ship. Quickly, before it could tug me off course, I shot the other end of the light lance into a nearby asteroid. The result was that the enemy ship unexpectedly found itself tethered to an asteroid. When it turned, it was yanked off course by the lance and slammed into the asteroid in a spray of sparks. "Hope you were watching that, Kuna," I thought with a grin of satisfaction. "Well done," Embot said. "Nearest enemy is at your 8, highlighting on proximity display." I followed his suggestion, making a set of maneuvers that took me into a denser section of the asteroid field. Enormous rocks tumbled in space there, shadows playing across them under the floodlights of my ship. Embot helpfully changed his proximity screen to a 3D hologram that showed a hovering scale map of the field, which rotated as I turned. I managed to get behind one of the other Krell, but the third one, the one that had gone around the outside direction, fell in behind me. Destructor blasts flashed around me and smashed the stones, spraying chips through the void. Debris popped against my shield. "Engaging synthetic auditory indicators," Embot said. And the soundlessness of space was replaced by rattling and explosions, reproduced to remind me of an in-atmosphere battle. I took this in, the sight of the asteroids, the feel of the explosions, the cold readouts, and the thundering of my own heart. And I grinned. This was what life was about. I spun through the asteroids, giving up the chase, and let both drones get on my tail. Then I led them in a sweeping game, dodging, light lancing, staying just ahead of them. Explosions rained around me. It was pure combat. My skill against that of the pilots, flying the drones from the safety of wherever they were holed up. The explosions from other parts of the battlefield showed me for certain how little the Dione's and the Krell regarded the lives of anyone they considered beneath them. True, it did seem that most of the time they gave ships a chance to surrender if their shield went down. Many did just this. In fact, many gave up even before losing their shields. It was difficult to be that precise with live fire, however, and some unfortunate ships took a stray shot just after their shield failed. Those didn't get a chance to surrender. Others kept fighting, stubbornly, when outnumbered and overwhelmed. They were not shown mercy. A blast from one of my tails exploded an asteroid just ahead of me, throwing out debris. I grunted and pivoted around a different asteroid to get out of the way. The grav caps flared as I took the turn, my seat rotating to divert the G-forces backward. The sudden spin still pressed my skin back from my face.
"Careful," Embot said. "I'd rather not get blown up today. I'm just starting to believe I'm alive. It would be unfortunate to suddenly become unalive."
"Trying," I said, grinning through gritted teeth as I launched out of the spin and reoriented myself, with the drones scrambling to follow.
"Do you think maybe I can learn to lie?" Embot said. "Really lie? And if I can, do you think that might prove I'm sapient?"
"Embot, this is really not the right time for an existential crisis. Please focus."
"Don't worry. I'm capable of doing both at once because of my multitasking routines."
I cut around another asteroid, then another, pushing myself, and even M-Bot's advanced grav caps to their limit. I was rewarded as one of the ships tailing me collided with an asteroid.
You know, you humans are lucky the superiority bands advanced AIs,
M-Bot said.
Machine reaction times are vastly faster than your fleshy ones. Your inferior biological brain would never be able to stay ahead of them.
He hesitated.
Not that humans are completely inferior to a robot. You do have better taste than I do in, glasses.
You don't wear glasses, I said. Wait, I don't wear glasses.
I'm trying to figure out how to lie, all right? It's not as easy as you all pretend it is.
I turned and popped up into a large clearing among the asteroids, an open spot where collisions weren't as threatening. Here, many of the more stubborn would-be pilots still scrambled about in a chaotic mess, destructor fire lighting up the placid asteroids.
1 plus 1, M-Bot said, is 2.
I could imagine the panic of those pilots. I had felt it during some of my first battles. Barely trained, confused by the mess of destruction around me. My instincts fighting my training.
1 plus 1, M-Bot said, is, 2.
As promised, the drones ignored anyone who started flashing their emergency lights. But I could imagine the heartbreak of being forced to do so. You lived your whole life in this suffocating society with no way to have a good fight. Then you were given a single beautiful chance at expression, only to lose it.
1 plus 1, M-Bot said, is 2. I can't say it. Maybe I can rewrite myself to no, I said.
Click, he replied. Click, 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 click. Great. I still had one tail, didn't I? I scanned the proximity monitor, wondering if I'd managed to lose them in the fighting. Indeed, as I entered the denser part of the asteroid field, no ships followed me. I'd lost my tail. I wasn't used to that. Krell would try to isolate single fighters, particularly if they proved to be very skilled. It was part of their instructions to find and destroy enemy cytonics. Today, though, it seemed like they had other orders. Seek the easiest prey. As I skimmed through the upper portion of the asteroid field, no other drones came after me. In fact, I noted several turning pointedly away from me. And, well, that was probably a good strategy. There was no reason to waste resources further testing a pilot with obvious skill. My heart wrenched as I saw a shuttlecraft explode after having its shield brought down. It was given a chance to surrender, but in a panic, its pilot lost control and collided with an asteroid. Poor soul. I scanned the battlefield, then fixated on another ship that had been split off from the main body. This larger fighter had a long front fuselage that looked almost like the barrel of a gun. The craft was slow for a fighter, but was also armed with many destructors, an obvious warship. Perhaps because of its slowness, it had attracted a large number of Krell. The drones spun around it, firing, wearing down its shield. It was basically done for, but refused to give up. I'd been there, refusing to admit I was beaten, because being beaten ended the dream.
I'm back, M-Bot said. What did I miss?
We're going in again, I said, swerving toward the unfortunate fighter. Hang on.
I don't have any hands, he said.
Why are we going in? It appears that most enemy ships are ignoring us.
I know, I said.
This is a timed survival, M-Bot said. If we want the best chances at success, we should hang back and not draw attention. So why not do that?
Because sometimes 1 plus 1 equals 3, I said. Then dove into the fray toward the struggling fighter.